Welcome to Sport Unpacked, a regular podcast that explores issues in sport and the views of researchers at La Trobe University. I'm Professor Russell Hoy, Director of La Trobe Sport, your host, and my guest today is Dr. Jodie Sither, Lecturer in Anatomy and Neurosciences from the School of Public Health and Human Biosciences here at La Trobe University. Our topic today is the application of eye-tracking studies to sport. Eye-tracking or eye movement research sounds very complex. Is it primarily about understanding how people make decisions based on what they see?
Well, eye-tracking methodology and technology can be used in a lot of different ways. Predominantly, a lot of research has been done helping us to understand people's behaviour. Some of the research that's been done has looked at just how people get around their daily activities and what we're looking at to help us guide what we do. So it's sort of guided action, perception, behaviour research. And a lot of research is being done in the marketing area. So you can imagine that marketers are keen to know sort of what features of products are drawing attention and what things have no relevance to consumer decisions and product purchasing decisions. So lots of things are being done in that area.
So would that be similar to when someone's driving along and seeing billboards, you know, which bits of the ad they actually pay more attention to? Is that what eye-tracking research tries to do as well?
Yes, absolutely. I'm not sure if they've actually done it driving. There are driving studies with eye-tracking, but perhaps really paying more attention to driver behaviour in terms of seeing, you know, attention to a child running out or sort of safety aspects of driving. But lots of web studies, marketing research using products where they have the same product dressed up in different ways and then looking at how long someone paid attention to a certain feature. Actually, those little ticks, the heart ticks and the sort of information like that, that's actually been something that's been studied quite a bit. And there's mixed results, seeing that some people pay attention to that and some don't, but that probably comes a bit down to what they're interested in.
So eye-tracking studies have obviously looked at advertising, as we've already mentioned. What other applications has eye-tracking studies been used for?
Early on, the eye tracker was used for usability and sort of designing better interfaces. So one of the early studies that was done was looking at how pilots in different scenarios utilise the cockpit. And so it was interested in a better design of the cockpit for pilots so that when they're under stress, they're actually able to get the best use out of their environment. And that's sort of gone on to then help user experience of software and the sort of user's navigation through the software. And it can help us determine if the navigation process is easy or convoluted and difficult and the person gets lost. So there's some quite interesting applications in that. In more of the scientific applications, it's been used to study attention in people. This university, actually, in the clinical vision sciences, they've looked at a study with people who've had traumatic brain injuries. They recognised that these people were having difficulty understanding people's facial expressions. So they used an eye tracker to actually look at where exactly on the face people with traumatic brain injury looked at compared to normal people. And they actually found that they looked at really different cues. So a normal person would look at the eyes and down to the mouth, but the people with traumatic brain injury were looking at ears, were looking at forehead, and they're now hoping to use that understanding to help guide the person back to looking at the more relevant cues. Another researcher here is looking into autism and looking at attention being paid by autistic children compared to normal children.
Okay, so it seems like in order to undertake eye movement research, you've got to know a lot about the eye. So can you give us a quick anatomy lesson on the human eye?
To understand how the eye tracker works to gather information, all you really need to know about the eye is that it's a sense organ of the human body that that we use predominantly. It's our predominant sense that we use. And the eye moves around because there's a tiny little bit in the back of the eye that is used to collect the most precise visual information. Most of our peripheral vision is quite fuzzy. We bring in all of the information into that small area, so we have to refocus that continually. So our eyes move around, refocusing the eyes onto the relevant areas. And what the eye tracker does is it uses an infrared light to shine onto the eye to find the pupil, and then it calculates based on the reflection of that light where the pupil has moved. And so then we can then calibrate that to the visual scene, either a screen or whatever the person happens to be looking at, and then it can help then almost draw a picture to where we've looked at, each little fine spot that we've stopped at and looked at, that's called a fixation, and where we've skipped over and moved to the next area of interest, and that's a saccade.
Right, and you must be able to measure how long someone fixates on a particular point in, what, milliseconds or fractions of time?
Yes, it's very, very fast. It's the eye tracker that we use is 120 hertz, which is taking a sample 120 times per second. It actually generates quite a lot of data, and to use the eye tracker, you need to filter the data and you need an understanding of how to usefully filter and analyse the data that you get.
Okay, so how do you go about doing eye tracking studies? They seem to be used in a lot of different applications and settings. What are the basic building blocks for doing the research?
Firstly, you need an eye tracker. There are quite a few different sorts of eye trackers, from the older types where they actually just stick something on somebody's eye, which was quite invasive, and I think that's why not a lot of research was done in that area, because it was painful to do the actual research. But today, they've got eye trackers that use infrared light that reflects, external eye trackers that can sit on a table so people can do manual tasks or look at where they're looking on a screen-based surface. Or you can actually also get goggles eye trackers so that the person can wear them and interact in their normal world and normal environment. The other important thing that you need as well as the eye tracker is really high-powered hardware. These things generate lots and lots of data, and they're also using quite highly visual-based material, so the graphics in them are quite extensive, and the computing hardware needs to be really, really robust. We're talking sort of like game-ending PCs with big video cards, big capture cards. Something else you probably need, which is just a general scientific sort of ingredient, if you like, is you need to be really rigorous with the setup of the study and the design of the study, needing to maintain really rigid conditions. And in the case of the eye tracker, the conditions of the light in the room can affect your results. The positioning of the hardware, everything needs to be really finely calibrated. So if somebody was looking at a word on the screen or text on a screen, you're talking about knowing the difference between if they're looking at the A or the B in the text. So if that's out in its calibration, your data is, you know, beginning to be meaningless. Our subjects, we need to have subjects that we know their eyes are working well. You can't use subjects that, if they have any kind of visual deficit or eye movement disorder. And so we screen for things like if they're taking medications that have known to affect their eye movements, because they'll generate erroneous data.
The anatomy of the eye, you've got the data that's generated in very high-powered computer software, and you've got the technical, actually, the eye-tracking machine. So you must work with a multidisciplinary team of other researchers, is that right?
Yes. Generally, the nature of this sort of work is bridging a few different discipline areas. So you'll get more out of it if you have a team of multidisciplinary people. For myself, I've sort of got the anatomy and the neuroscience and the eye-tracking background. In one area, we're looking at sports, and so I'll be working with coaches and players and people from public health with sort of sporting industry and skill knowledge. And in another area, I'm working with a team of people from the cinema studies area. And so we have in that a photographer, a sound designer, people who specialise in film theory, ethnography. So it does lend itself to bringing together. And it actually makes it really exciting and really interesting kind of research to bring together these people. And it sorts of tries to begin to marry sciences with different areas outside of the sciences. And it's really create some interesting discussions and data.
So how long have you been interested in this type of research? What type of studies have you or your students conducted in this area?
I've been using the eye tracker for about 7 years, and it started following research that I completed within my PhD in forensic handwriting expertise, which sounds like a far leap from eye tracking. But at the end of that, we started to bring in the eye tracker to look at where the forensic experts were looking when they examined signatures. And recent research with a PhD student and a number of honours students has looked at where forgers actually look when they're completing difficult or simple forgeries.
So it seems to have a lot of applications for sport, and one of your more recent studies was related to eye-tracking behaviours of football coaches. What were you seeking to find, and how did you go about that study?
This study sort of grew out of discussions between myself and Mandy Ruddick-Hudson from Public Health. We were having discussions about how we could potentially find out more about what would improve training for players and coaches in football within their normal domain of what they're doing. How could they get more out of that? discussions that have led to suggesting that with an eye tracker, we'd be able to actually see a little bit more into what are the good players paying attention to that maybe the not so good players aren't. Then we started looking into the literature and finding some really interesting other studies that have looked at different sports, such as soccer and cricket and basketball. And they were finding some really interesting things about when you compared elite players to sub-elite players, such as they looked at different parts of the body, or that they were much faster to look at really important cues than the sub-elite players. And that helped them understand how the players were potentially predicting ball play and predicting future movements of other players. And so we thought this might be really interesting to look at within football. So the study that is currently being developed and undertaken is looking at both players and coaches, different studies, but we're looking at what are the important cues for different players in their different positions. What's a coach looking at when they're trying to determine whether a player is improving in their skill or is performing that skill efficiently or effectively? So the eye tracking at this stage will be using video segments and getting the players and coaches to watch those. We'll be looking at their eye movements that they're making when they're watching the different plays and segments of play, and trying to glean from that the important things of what they're seeing and how that relates to the decisions that they're making.
That seems to have enormous implications if you're going to draft some players and they both have the same athletic ability. And then when you want to judge them on their, you know, what is commonly called their football brain or decision-making ability, this could be another piece of the puzzle for a recruiter to actually apply that sort of study, couldn't it?
Yes, that's potentially quite a very interesting area for this research to go into. In soccer, they have looked at that in their drafting process. And in some of the young, very good players, what they've seen is that they tend to show some of those early signs visually, even if their skill level physically isn't actually up to the speed yet. So it is potentially a tool that can harness that or sort of tap into that, which may not come out in other ways.
That raises another question about if you're doing physical testing on an athlete, usually they don't really mature physically till about 15, 16. At what age can you start to do eye tracking research with younger sports people to sort of get an inclination or an indication of their decision-making abilities?
That is an interesting question, and I don't know the answer. I know that with eye tracking, you can eye track babies, for example. There's no limit to the age that you can eye track somebody. It would come down really to the design of the study, in a sense. That would be really interesting, though.
Yeah, it seems to have a lot of applications for a number of sports that, you know, target sports like shooting and archery. Everything from the fast decision-making ball sports would have some.
Yes, those sorts of sports would be really interesting in terms of just to see how steady somebody can keep their eye as well, because the eye is actually quite dynamic and really hard to keep still. But I know from with archery that they try to almost even slow their heartbeat down in a sense to try and get as still as possible, target lock on, and then shoot. But that would be really interesting to compare those. The scope for this is massive.
I see a lot of applications for weekend warriors playing golf as well, in terms of, you know, the obvious the coaching tips about, you know, watching the ball. That becomes a huge area for research about how well people can do that.
Yes, and see, this is where you start to find out some interesting things from eye tracking, because sometimes when you compare where an expert looks and a non-expert looks, they might not be paying attention to the things that maybe coaches are telling them to pay attention to. This is where we can start to sort of bring out some of those important cues. And they might be different for different position players or different level players, or it might actually be quite random and it might be more of an internal process that is driving what they're trying to look at, what their brain is sort of directing them to focus their attention to.
What were some of the key findings from that study of the coaches and players, or is that study still in training?
It's still in play. So it's very early days and we don't have any findings yet. We're still collecting data. But we'll be looking at things such as what people pay attention to and comparing the different position players, different level players. And we'll be looking at things like reaction time, so how quickly they can attend to things, and how good players are able to not look at distractors, if that makes sense. So we're actually going to be looking at early level players as well, so making a comparison. One of the things we're expecting to see is potentially that the less elite, the less professional, the less experienced, the more they'll be distracted by distractors. And that's one of the ideas that a good player is able to discard those and not pay any attention to them, so they can focus all of their attention onto the important things.
It seems to have implications of findings from all those studies and others which are yet to be done, are the implications cut across, you know, recruiting techniques to coaching methodology to actually coach someone to look differently at plays and to make decisions. So are they some of the broad implications of your research in the sporting field?
Yes, we intend to sort of devise things that can lend themselves to players learning off the experienced players. I think it would be interesting even to just show, particularly for the coaches. The coaches study, I think junior coaches will find it interesting just to watch the replay of where coaches are watching, because it's one of those things where a lot of it will come down to instinctual or gut feelings. So it's hard for the coach to articulate what they see and what they're doing. For junior coaches, just to watch what their senior coaches are looking at, they'll be able to get interesting information from that.
And you mentioned earlier some of the challenges about having the right software, the right equipment, and you know, having the right subjects in terms of screening them for their suitability for these types of studies. Are there other challenges you face in doing this sort of eye tracking research?
The technical ones are probably the biggest, to be honest. It took us 18 months to get our system actually running in a way we were confident we were getting good data from it, just because of the complications of video capture cards and our data not coming in as fast as we wanted it to, because we wanted the eye tracker to be completely synchronized with what we were viewing. And if you're on top of it and you check everything, if you're very obsessive about checking everything to make sure it's running absolutely perfectly every single time, then the technical issues aren't so problematic. But you just need one small problem with your technology and then you can lose a day's worth of data collecting, which when you're working with an elite football team, you've only got a couple of hours, it can be quite problematic.
Yeah, that can be a challenge. So what's the further research? Where are you taking this in the future, do you think?
There's so many different places, and I guess that will really come down to how things evolve. At this point, future work is definitely within the AFL, with the Coaches Association, with coaches and with players, potentially into recruiting techniques and draft camps and things like that. And in the other areas, there's definitely scope for lots of things in the allied health area, looking at how the client or the patient is interacting with their therapy or with their treatments. And as I mentioned before, there's also applications still in the forensic area. We've got more projects going on within that, and in the cinema area, looking at how viewers inspect a movie, what they're actually paying attention to.
All right. Thanks, Jodie. That's it for today. My thanks to Dr. Jodie Sitter, lecturer in Anatomy and Neurosciences from the School of Public Health and Human Biosciences here at La Trobe University. Thanks also to Matt Smith from the digital media team for his great production. You can also follow me on Twitter at Russ Hoy. You can find a copy of this podcast on the La Trobe University website under the News tab, and also at www.latrobe.edu.au/CSSI.